I suppose if we're going to play this song to bring on a Florida state legislator, it might be the mistake song because it's the opposite of what's happening in reality as people move from blue states to red states. Nevertheless, whoever was angry about playing a little LL on a Friday morning. Joining us now, we have Alex Andrade. He is our state representative for District 2, southern half of Escambia County, Gulf Breeze, and the beach. Welcome back to the show, sir.
Hey, good morning, Andrew. Happy Friday.
I guess technically I always say the beach, but I should say both beaches. I guess really, you know, pretty good too. But I always think that one's assumed, and the Pensacola Beach is a little bit different because it's of the geographical nature of things. But anyway, welcome back. Hey, first thing I wanted to ask you, in the Senate health policy, I know that you're not in the Senate side, but in the Senate health policy meeting the other day, they had a representative of Florida Department of Health, and they were asking her questions about better data reporting daily as opposed to weekly. I tend to support the weekly. I think it actually makes sense. I just continue to wish we had better reporting. Manny Diaz was asking for some kind of reporting on natural immunity to go along with vaccine-based immunity. I, of course, keep saying that we ought to have good death reporting, which we do not have. I asked you previously if you could look into that a little bit. Have you had any success on that?
If by success you mean getting more information and more in-depth reporting, the answer would be no. But, I mean, the success really comes with the fact that we're ranked, you know, our COVID infection rates and deaths are, you know, the third lowest in the country at this point. So, you know, there's the questions about like reporting information tracking, you know, some of the things that, you know, do matter as far as the public discourse and understanding what's going on. And then there's the pandemic itself and how it's affecting people's daily lives. And I think, you know, I'll take our third lowest in the country infection and death rate at this point.
I agree with that. I agree with that. But the problem is that during the Delta wave, because we didn't have good death data, we couldn't really tell how bad it was and for whom it was bad. And I don't think we were able to make good decisions on the basis of that lack of information. And I'm trying to, you know, God help us. I hope that we are past it all. I hope that we don't see any more waves of the variants or any other. But I'm trying to avert this for the next time so that if, God forbid, there's another wave, we can really tell what's going on. I mean, 18,000 people in Florida died in the Delta wave. That doesn't get reported an awful lot, but that's a huge number.
One, when you say it doesn't get reported an awful lot, I'm going to ask where you've been. Florida got hammered heavily by the media during the Delta wave as if somehow Florida was failing, despite the fact that, you know, we understand how these kind of waves come and go. And we understand how they will affect one region first and move to other regions of the country.
Sure.
The decision-making process, what data comes in and what decisions go out. Governor DeSantis has a pretty, you know, well-established rubric. And if he felt to make his decisions, he needed more information, you know, of course, that information will be developed. At this point, I mean, in Florida, we have, bans on, you know, forced masking of kids in schools. We have bans on criminal punishments for not complying with a local government's mask mandate. Local businesses can't require someone to show their vaccine card before providing them services or goods. So the decision making process at this point is less in the hands of the government and more in the hands of everyday folks who, if you're concerned about COVID yourself, you know, decide whether or not you want to get the vaccine. If you're not, you know, and you get infected, you know, hopefully you have access to the monoclonal antibody infusion services and consult with your doctor now to get tested.
Yeah. And of course, obviously, we have the possibility of this Merck pill coming and other things. I think that we do well, and I, of course, support most of the governor's policies, but I just don't think information withholding is a good strategy. And we have been information withholding, particularly on death data at the county level by the state. Other stuff, though, that, you know, we got to talk about, make sure, is one is other states have been doing these audits of the 2020 election. This is not going to happen in Florida, right?
The Governor Santis and Laura Lee, the Secretary of State, came out this week and both said that they don't plan on engaging in an audit of our state election. And I just want to remind folks, in Florida that we do already audit our elections. We have significant redundancies in place that inject safeguards into the process. You know, our list maintenance across the board is regularly updated so that, you know, dead people aren't voting in Florida, or at least not nearly at the rate that some people convince themselves and believe. So
I grew up in Chicago. I know what you're talking about.
But I don't believe we'll be having an audit. That doesn't mean anybody's opposing an audit. It's just, you know, it's the same. Our Constitution requires some due process. It requires, you know, someone, you know, have some kind of finding of probable cause before you can go, you know, prosecute some kind of activity. If you just have a gut feeling that something bad happened in Florida, it's one thing. It doesn't justify government action. And if you actually care about the Constitution, it really shouldn't.
You are also working on redistricting, and this is something that the last time around this was extremely controversial with lawsuits and everything. Where is the redistricting process at for the state? This is Senate and House seats. And also, I guess, congressional maps. Sorry, and congressional maps, too. My fault.
No, where we're at right now is we are in the process of still kind of public information. We had our second committee meeting this past week. You know, folks at this point of the stage, they can go online to the website and they can go create their own maps based on the information we have using the same platform that we'll be using. And they can go create and submit their own proposed Florida Senate, Florida House, and Florida and U.S. congressional maps to the committee. And they'll be, you know, uploaded in real time for our review and consideration. So, you know, if you want to be a part of the process, if you have proposed ideas about how to draw our maps for these, you know, three different legislative bodies, feel free to go online and submit them.
Yeah, outstanding. I love participation. Back to Alex Andrade. Alex, when it comes to redistricting, you know, the state constitution, it doesn't say an awful lot, but the things it says are important. And, you know, we're supposed to work on stuff like compactness and keeping in mind natural boundaries, roadway boundaries, neighborhoods, contiguity and stuff like that. A term that comes up in this context is gerrymandering. And I think a lot of times people, maybe they've heard the term, but they're not exactly sure what it is and what it prohibits, if it even prohibits anything. What from your point of view as a state legislator and a city attorney and a lawyer, what would qualify as gerrymandering that would be prohibited or illegal, however you want to phrase it?
So, first and foremost, there's, you know, two tiers of standards that we have to consider. Tier one standards, you know, are the highest standards we have to make sure, you know, that something like district shall consist of contiguous territory, meaning you can't have a district that is somehow cut off and not connected. You know, in the tier two standards, the standard is the district has to be compact. It has to be, you know, relatively, the size has to make sense. And so this isn't just an eyeball sniff test, you know, if something doesn't pass the sniff test. These are scientific questions, and there are three different scores that each district is given in the process. And they're scientific scores based on, you know, mathematical calculations, trying to determine if it is within a reasonable degree of compactness. So they're called the REOC score, the convex hull score, and the Polsby-Popper score. And I would encourage anyone who is really concerned about gerrymandering to go on to myfloridahouse.gov, go look up the redistricting committee, and then go review those three mathematical calculations to see just how, you know, scientifically tied this whole objective, this whole process is supposed to be. Because if a district doesn't meet those scores, it doesn't come within a specific range for those three scores, the district's not considered compact.
You know, we've had a conversation, I know it's not your purview exactly, but in Escambia County about some of the proposed districts. Do those scoring mechanisms or any of the software that's designed to process them, does any of that work at the county level, or is it only designed for state congressional and Senate and House seats?
That is a great question, Andrew, and one that I'm going to assume that in a very broad, abstract way, they'd probably have to comply with, but I'm not exactly sure what the statutory mandate is, or if these are self-imposed scores that we're putting on ourselves in the Florida legislature.
Got it. And I know there are different rules between the state legislative restrictions and what would happen at the county or the city level. And so, you know, that even if it does apply as a restriction against the state, it may not apply the same way against counties. I understand that too. Great information as always. I love having you on as the lawyer because you always have something to explain to us, which is great. Alex Andrade, our state representative for District 2, both islands, plus Gulf Breeze, plus the southern half of Escambia County. Thanks so much for the time, Alex. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Andrew.